Welcome to Faith Under Fire. When I was a spiritual skeptic, I got into an interesting argument with a Christian about whether the universe was designed or whether it's a product of purely natural and random processes. He said, look at your watch. He said, a device as sophisticated as that watch, which can tell time right down to the second, was obviously designed by an intelligent person. But he said, then, let your eyes glance down to your hand. He said, your hand is much more complicated, much more sophisticated than your watch. So, wouldn't it make sense that your hand, in fact, all of you, was created by an intelligent designer? What would you have said to him? This issue of where the universe and life itself came from is a hot topic these days. School districts around the country are grappling with what students should be taught. And even George W. Bush weighed in by saying that the teaching of intelligent design shouldn't be off limits. But is this a scientific theory or just the biblical account from Genesis dressed up in pseudo-scientific clothing? Everything boils down to this. In which direction do you believe the overall evidence of science is pointing? Toward or away from a creator? In this session, you're going to hear a debate between a Christian and an atheist. And I hope you'll feel free to offer your own opinions as well. Have a great discussion. The theory of evolution is now being challenged by a new theory that says the universe looks designed because it was designed. The concept is called intelligent design because it claims there was an intelligence behind creation. A leading proponent is Dr. Stephen Meyer. He's director of the Center for Science and Culture at Seattle's Discovery Institute and co-author of Darwinism, Design, and Public Education. Disagreeing with him is Dr. Michael Shermer, publisher of Skeptic Magazine and author of The Science of Good and Evil. I want to start with you, Dr. Meyer, because you're kind of making the affirmative claim here and say, you know, if you can just avoid the technical jargon as much as you can, give me three or four reasons why you believe there is an intelligent designer of the universe.
You bet. Maybe I should start from the beginning. Cosmologists and physicists now tell us that the universe began from a finite time ago, from an infinitesimally small spatial volume, effectively a zero point, in which there was neither matter nor space nor time nor energy. And this points to a cause beyond the universe, the cause of the universe itself, something that a cause that would transcend matter, space, time, and energy. Secondly, physicists are now talking about the fine-tuning of the universe. They tell us that the initial arrangement of matter, the laws and constants of physics, are all delicately balanced to allow for life to exist. For example, if the force of gravitational attraction were a little bit stronger or weaker, if the rate of the expansion of the universe were a little bigger or smaller, life would be impossible as we know it. One physicist, Sir Fred Hoyle, has said that it looks as if a super intellect has monkeyed with physics and chemistry to make life possible. And thirdly, and I think most importantly, in the realm of biology, people have over the last 50 years discovered an intricate realm of nanotechnology and information processing. There are little miniature circuits inside cells, so-called signal transduction circuits. There are little miniature machines. My colleague Michael Behe at the Discovery Institute has made one of these famous, a little rotary engine inside the cell wall that looks like something, for all the world, like something that Mazda designed. It has O-rings, it has bushings, it has a drive shaft, it has a little propeller that moves this little bacterium through liquid. This is high tech in low life. And I think finally and most importantly is the discovery that at the base of all life depends on information, that it depends on a four-character digital code that is resident in the DNA molecule. And people who are trying to explain the origin of life through various types of evolutionary theory have been utterly flummoxed by the question of the origin of these genetic assembly instructions.
Michael, you're the editor of Skeptic Magazine. I don't expect you to be anything less than skeptical about that. Well, how do you analyze the evidence as Dr. Meyer presented it?
Well, it's important to note that when we're talking about those kinds of questions, regardless of whether the answers I'm about to give are right or not, and they may change because science is constantly changing, the default answer is not that therefore there must be a designer or a God. A default answer that's perfectly acceptable in science is we don't know. Now, we do know, actually, quite a bit about the four categories that Stephen just discussed. For example, the fact that the universe had an origin and therefore there must have been a creator Just begs the question of, well, who created the creator or the intelligent designer? The fact that something has to have a creation just leads to the next question of, well, then who created that entity and who created that entity? And the theological answer is, well, God is that which does not need to be created. Well, why can't the universe be that which does not need to be created?
Okay, let's pause there.
That's a very good point.
Very good point,
Stephen.
What I would say to that is that philosophically, something has to be the thing from which everything else comes. Something has to be what philosophers call the prime reality. And
why does that have to be God? Who created God? That's what I want to know.
The Big Bang Theory and general relativity suggest that matter is a crummy candidate to be the thing from which everything else comes, because if you go back far enough, you end up with a place in which you have no matter.
It
no
may
space,
not be
no
matter.
No
it may energy. Just be pure energy. It could be quantum foam fluctuation. It could be a black hole in another universe. It could be a number of things. We're not sure yet.
What physicists are saying now is that the primary thing at the very beginning is actually an information wave. And again, we're back to the same argument I was making in biology, that information in our experience comes from mind. And so from what we know about the causes of the origin of information, we're looking at evidence of design not only in life, but right back to the beginning of the universe.
Okay, but where did the information come from, in your opinion, in the first place?
I think it came from an intelligent creator that transcends matter, space, time, and energy.
And who created that intelligent creator?
I think that is the prime reality.
Okay, Michael, beyond this issue of the beginning of the universe, and it seems to me he's saying whatever begins to exist has a cause, the universe, every scientist admits, began to exist, therefore must have a cause.
Yeah, but you're just talking about ultimate causes.
I understand that, but the question then becomes, you know...
Yeah, let's talk about design and biology.
Let's go to the next point. It looks designed. It is designed. That's why it looks designed. It is designed. We're not debating whether it's design or not. There is design. You'd have to be barking mad to not think that the life is not designed. It is designed. But it's designed from the bottom up by a natural process of evolution. And that's why it looks tinkered and not very well designed and sort of patchworked and put together from previous organisms and structures and functions and so on. It doesn't look to me very well intelligent design.
Good point. Stephen, how do you respond to those?
Well, I think it's exquisitely designed, especially when you look at what's going on at the molecular level and the information processing system that is the basis of all living systems. He's made the argument, for example, that the eye is not well designed because the wiring appears inverted to some physiologists. But others dispute that and say that the vertebrate eye is an exquisitely designed system that represents what engineers call constrained optimization, where many factors have been optimized to achieve the best overall functionality. So this vertebrate eye that evolutionists say is not well designed, that looks tinkered with, is actually the same eye that eagles use to achieve this incredible visual acuity that they have.
Look at the human body. I mean, it's just you have to believe in a higher power than what we are. It's not a random occurrence.
I'm all for the Big Bang Theory as long as God created the Big Bang. I'm a true believer in God, so I don't think science made us. I think God did.
I don't know about the Big Bang Theory. I'm not sure about that one, but I don't think anybody created the world, no.
We're back discussing evolution versus intelligent design with Dr. Stephen Meyer and Dr. Michael Shermer. Stephen, the intelligent design movement's been criticized by some by saying, hey, it's just a bunch of Christians trying to get their theological viewpoint propagated. Is that a fair criticism?
Well, it would be fair if it were also fair to say that Darwinism has been undermined in its credibility by the fact that many or most Darwinists are agnostics or atheists. I mean, Michael Shermer and Eugenie Scott and Richard Dawkins have all signed the Third Humanist Manifesto, which is a call for an aggressive atheistic world order. And two can play that motive-mongering game, but the problem with it is that it doesn't settle anything. You have to evaluate arguments by the quality of the evidence and the reasoning that are used to support them.
And there has
and
been
Michael Shermer wants to say that belief in intelligent design is a weird belief that's used to justify a prior religious commitment. We think it's a perfectly sensible belief, whatever your religious commitment. If you see evidence of software or something that functions like software, it's perfectly reasonable to infer that there was a programmer.
Of course, but when almost every single member I know of your movement is an evangelical Christian, you hardly have any Jews or Baptists or Buddhists or anything anything like that. That makes me suspect.
That just makes me suspect
of something. It would be like if every single member of a group were Democrat or Republican, and I would think, okay, maybe they're right, but that makes me skeptical of something else going on here.
Stephen, I want to ask you, is it possible to believe in Darwinian evolution and be a Christian?
It's certainly possible as a personal matter, but I think it's logically contradictory. The problem is, it really depends on what you mean by evolution. If by evolution you mean simply that things change, yeah, things change, and you can believe that and be a Christian, a theist, a Jew, anything you like, and be logically consistent. What Darwinism says, though, is things change as a result of a purely undirected natural process.
I don't see why it couldn't be perfectly reasonable for a believer to think that it or God or whoever used the natural forces to create life as it is. That's how God works. What's wrong with that?
Well, that's right. If he uses natural forces, directs them in some way, that's a form of design. That's not what Darwinism says. Darwinism says things look designed, but they're not really, because an undirected process produced the appearance of design.
But the actual...
A designer can't direct an undirected process.
Well, a designer could use natural selection. A designer could do anything he wants, particularly
it's directed process. It's not a directed process.
First of all, then why are you an atheist, Michael? And secondly, you're an agnostic or whatever you are. And secondly, this is Darwin explicitly rejected that interpretation of natural selection.
Okay.
The whole point of it is that it's natural selection, he said, acting on random variation. If you want to make it, if you want God directing it, it defeats the purpose of my theory, he said.
Okay, two answers. One, I don't believe in God because I don't think the evidence is strong enough to make that commitment, which is not a small commitment to make. It's an important, serious one. I was once a born-again Christian. I did that. It was serious. I don't think it's something you take lightly, and my evaluation of the evidence now is it's not enough. So, and two, I have a commitment to science, and the scientific method requires that we look for natural explanations for natural phenomena. There is no such thing as the supernatural or the paranormal. There's just the natural, the normal, and all the stuff we can't explain yet. And it's okay in science to just say, I don't know. We don't have answers to all these things.
Well, we agree with that, too. I mean, there's an awful lot of dogmatic Darwinism that would be much better served by exactly the attitude that you suggest, that, you know, rather than saying we understand something we don't, it's good to say we don't know.
Yeah.
But our argument is based on what we know and on a kind of logical apparatus that's used routinely in science, which is to say, given the evidence, what's the best explanation given everything we know so far? And that's the grounds by which we infer design.
Terrific. Very good debate. Thanks for exploring both of it, guys. One of the main reasons I became an atheist was because of the theory of evolution I was taught in school. My conclusion was that if chemical evolution can explain the origin of life, and if neo-Darwinism could explain its development and diversity, then God was out of a job. Ironically, though, even though my road to atheism was paved by science, so was my later journey to God. As I delved much deeper into the data, I found myself agreeing with hundreds of scientists, with doctorates from Cambridge, Stanford, Yale, Cornell, Rutgers, Chicago, Princeton, Berkeley, and other prestigious institutions who have publicly declared their skepticism over the grandest claims of Darwin. On the positive side, though, I learned that a series of scientific discoveries over the last 50 years in a wide range of scientific disciplines, from cosmology, physics, and astronomy, to biochemistry, genetics, and human consciousness, point powerfully and persuasively toward the existence of a creator. I ended up writing a 340-page book, The Case for a Creator, to describe the evidence that I found most convincing. Ultimately, I found myself agreeing with Dr. James Tour, the noted nanoscientist from Rice University, who said, "Only a rookie who knows nothing about science would say science takes away from faith. If you really study science," he said, "it will bring you closer to God." Do you agree with them? Now that your group has had a chance to discuss this topic, where do you stand right now?